You're listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone. This show will give you the tools and information for better health as you age. Now, here's your host, Kendra Vallone.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our show, Aging Redefined, brought to you by VITAS Hospice, who is your partner till the end. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, who is board certified in pulmonary medicine, internal medicine, and advanced training in anti-aging, Dr. Larry Emder. Dr. Emder, how are you?
I am doing great, and thanks for having me on the show.
But always. Well, now that you're my co-host, you are permanently, you have a permanent spot.
Oh, thanks.
Unless you say something that
Thank you for not kicking me off the show.
You're so welcome. Well, you're very valuable to this show. And for our listeners that are just tuning in for the first time, our show has been on at 6 a.m. and we finally kind of kicked it into gear where people are awake at 2 o'clock these days in the afternoon. So that's great because we've got a lot of great information. And our show is basically designed to encourage healthy aging. Is that kind of, that's what we're doing with
That's we want everybody to live life longest to the fullest, free of chronic diseases, free of cancer.
Right. Absolutely. And there are a lot of ways to do that. So our show kind of covers everything from, you know, diets to dementia, what happens in a nursing home. Oh, my gosh, I hurt my knee. We need, you know, a knee replacement. What kind of goes into all of that? And along the way, we've got some great guests that come on. In fact, today we've got a super guest a little bit later. Dr. James Sinclair will be joining us.
Expert in oncology.
Yes.
So we're going to learn what that is and what it's all about.
Very detailed. But for now, how's everything going with you?
Oh, everything's great. I don't have any nice chit-chat stories for last weekend because I had to work.
I know. And usually, we've been jet-setters here. I mean, you're flying to Colorado. I'm flying to Korea. We're all over the place. So we can't say that anything too exciting has been happening.
Tune in the month of August because I'm going fly fishing in the Kinnikuk River in Alaska. So
no kidding.
Assuming I don't get eaten by a bear, I hope to come back with some good stories.
Yeah, I'll have to get some other co-hosts lined up.
Yeah, I just don't know how I'm going to be able to eat, vegan and vegetarian and gluten-free in the bush, but we're going to work on that.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And carrying over from previous shows for our audience members out there that are brand new, Dr. Emder does have some very strange diets going on. And so at the moment, and books that we've been listening to and watching documentaries on food, like Forks Over Knives and all of that, great information now. Dr. Emder is pretty much, you're eating ice cubes these days. That's about it, right?
Grape ice cubes. You know, I'm doing this for our audience. I'm trying all these diets to make sure, you know, before we roll it out to the audience that we're not going to kill anybody. So
that's a good idea.
I'm working on myself.
Everybody.
What's that?
You're going to outlive everybody. So you just turn around and.
That's okay. I did take my 7-year-old grandson to see The Lone Ranger.
Oh, how was that?
It was wonderful, and it was all about ancestors and the spirit world. And after the movie was over, he said, "Grandpa," he says, "I'm the future, and you're not the future."
He did not say that.
He says, "But you'll be part of the spirit world." So I said, "Thank you very much." But he's probably right.
Yeah, that's so sweet. Well. At least he kind of knows what he's talking about. Well if he's going to be the future, he's got to start eating like
well. Well, that's what I told him. I said, if you don't stop eating all these fried foods, I said, you may be in the spirit world with me. I didn't tell him that. I don't want to ruin his day.
Oh, that's so sad, though. I miss my fried food. I'm on, though you are doing your vegan and vegetarian and everything else under the sun, I am sticking to the gluten-free thing. So I've been doing that for about a month now after reading Wheat Bellies and talking about how the wheat of yesterday is not the same as the wheat of today. So it's not necessarily that I don't have celiac disease or anything like that, but just trying to see if it does make a difference. And at the same time, it's kind of having that effect where everything, I'm looking at every label, and though it might not have gluten in it, I'm watching everything else that's got in it, and it's making me put it back. So either
there
way,
you go.
I'm just starting to eat. Yeah, who knows?
How do you feel?
I feel good.
They talk about this mind fog if you have too much wheat and if you have a wheat sensitivity. Have you experienced that at all?
I don't know. I can't say that I have. I mean, the stuff that it's supposed to get rid of some of, like if you've got a little eczema, like patches of eczema, which I have a few dry spots, it's supposed to get rid of that. You know, obviously stomach fat, but I haven't really had a lot of that. I carry it in other places, so we'll find the diet for that later. And
now you're pretty perfect. You know.
Oh, well, thanks, Dr. Amter. That's just so sweet. That's why I keep you on. But
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. But regardless, I mean, I'm working on it, just trying to get healthy, being more active. In fact, last weekend, I brought my golf game back to life. I've been practicing a lot. I used to be a professional golfer. But
I didn't know that.
You didn't?
I didn't know that.
Really?
But I figured you're flying to Korea for promos for golf, I figured you'd be pretty good.
For Titleist, good company. Yeah, I've had my moments.
Well, that's why I didn't challenge you to a round of golf.
Yeah. Have you ever picked up a golf club?
I did. I used to sneak on golf courses when I was 13.
Really?
Because I couldn't afford to, pay the entrance fee.
Right. But at least you practiced.
I played, and I also played wiffle ball golf in my neighborhood growing up.
Oh, no kidding.
It's just a little bit too time-consuming for me as an adult.
It is. It's a four-hour round, which is hard because you'd think doctors play a lot, but they don't. You find one every once in a while that's willing to go out there for a little bit. But
great sport, good exercise, very relaxing, and it gets you out there. I did buy at a fundraiser some golf lessons, and
no kidding.
I actually went for the lessons, and the coach was telling me to keep your head down, keep your arms straight, and I hit this ball. It goes like 150 yards in the air, and then it rolls like another 50 yards, and the guy was like amazed, and it was all from playing golf with wiffle balls for years between 10 and 13. So he said I was a natural golfer.
I'm surprised it didn't get you hooked, because that's usually how it works. Golf is one of those sports where you can suck for 17 holes, and then on 18, you hit these great shots, and you're like, I figured it out. I'm awesome. I'm going to come back and do it again, and it's just a serious
thing. He was like so impressed that he actually gave me the golf club and said, just bring it back tomorrow for tomorrow's lesson. And at the end of the lesson, I bought another bucket of balls. And again, everyone, I'm whacking it 150, 200 yards straight. But the next day, I couldn't walk. So I've got a week back. And I ended up, I think, herniating a disc. So that was the end of my rebirth of my golfing. But I think in my next life, I definitely want to be a golfer.
Okay. Hey, well, I can take you out there, give you a few lessons. But that's what's happened to me in my pro days. There was so much training involved and running. Most people don't think about it as being such an aerobic sport, but I used to wake up every morning and run 5 miles, do sprints, because it's all about those fast twitch muscles. And I have actually hurt my knees. So over time, as we get orthopedic surgeons on the show, I'm going to be picking their brains about stuff. And that's another thing, actually, that gluten, it talked about that gluten can help your joints. So we'll see how it goes.
Being gluten-free.
Being gluten-free, yeah. So gluten doesn't help it, but removing gluten helps that.
Well, I'm about 2.5 weeks into this gluten business.
Are you sticking strong to it?
I cheat every now and then.
Right.
And the next day I pay for it. So
really?
Yeah. So it's
like you're bloated, or what happens?
I get cramping and some other things we can't talk about on the air that are not pleasant.
Another show.
So I don't know. I don't know if it's psychological or if it's the real deal. But we're gluten free, and the nice thing about being gluten free is you're also not getting all that sugar when you eat wheat.
Yeah.
So my weight is down. I wasn't overweight before. Weighed like 158 maybe, but I'm now down to 154.
What, and how tall are you?
I'm 5'10", so perfect BMI of 22. But at this point, I have to eat so I don't lose any more weight because I don't want to go any lower. So,
right, but what can you eat? That is the question.
Well, that is a big question. I've been eating a lot of fish, Kendra gives me my medical training, and she sent me an email saying that too much fish and these fish oil supplements increase your risk of prostate cancer.
Yes.
So I'm not eating meat. I was eating fish. Now I can't eat fish. Mm-hmm. So it looks like
everything in moderation, right?
Yeah. Well, we're going to come out with a cookbook. It'll probably be like 3 pages long.
I know. About flavored ice cubes.
Food left for me to eat. So.
Right. And again, as we were talking about last week, we did just start a Facebook page that's called Aging Redefined Radio. So you can check out our pictures on there. But we also are running a contest on there to try to get some recipes. So for our listeners out there that might have recipes for, gluten-free, vegan.
How do they get to the Facebook page?
They just go on Facebook and type in Aging Redefined Radio.
Aging Redefined.
Yep.
They say repetition. Aging Redefined.
Get you in your marketing.
So send in those recipes because Dr. Emder needs something to eat.
Yes.
So, Kendra, what's new in the news as far as medicine?
New in medicine. All right. Well, we've got a couple things. I don't know how much time we've got left on this segment, but
yeah, but 2 minutes left.
I'm going to give you the big one that popped up. A couple weeks ago, I was talking about a study that was published that found eating high carbs is actually addictive. I don't know if you remember that, but it stimulates parts of the brain related to addiction, creates that euphoria that's similar to taking drugs, which is just totally bad news. Well, on a similar note, the American Medical Association has now deemed that obesity is a disease. And I honestly don't know how I feel about this. How do you feel about this, Dr. Emder?
It is a disease. There's no doubt about it. People that are overweight, they die younger, for sure.
Okay. But when you think of a disease, is that something that you can help? Like, that's kind of the question. If you dub it a disease, does that mean that people kind of throw their hands up and go, well, I unfortunately contracted this disease and there's nothing I can do about it? And they kind of, they play the victim card there. And I don't want to throw that. I mean, I know there are people that I shouldn't just say that because that's not necessary. I'm kind of playing devil's advocate with this.
I think the issue is that the obesity is associated with a lot of comorbidities. Now, what are those? Those are things like diabetes and hypertension, increased risk of cancer. So everybody's, you know, spending a lot of money on their health, where they could save a lot of that money if they just, you know, went on a reasonable diet and lost their weight and tried to get their BMI down, which is their body mass index, down to the 22 to 26 range.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's all sorts of publications stating what your weight should be for a certain height. And, you know, I think that should be everybody's goal, you know, rather than going out and, you know, buying expensive medications.
Right. And see, that's kind of the argument against it, because some of the people that were arguing against it had said that the measure used to categorize obesity, which is that BMI, body mass index, is flawed. So people might have a higher BMI than the level that is actually considered obese.
I think we should have an expert on the show for the to talk about that. That's a great point.
Okay. All right. Well, we can definitely do that. So for our audience members out there, I wish I had more information for you, but obviously we can talk about what's new in medicine next time. So stay with us after this brief word from our sponsor, Vitas Hospice, and we will be right back with Dr. James Sinclair.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only Vitas provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only Vitas employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and have the very best care. I did my research. Only Vitas had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call Vitas Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit vitas.com for more information.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And today we have a special co-host on.
Say, very special.
Yeah.
Super special.
Super. And, super special.
And when I go over his bio, I think everybody will understand why. Mm-hmm. This is Dr. Sinclair, who's graduated from the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And he did his internship, residency, and fellowship right here in San Diego, UCSD, which is one
local.
Of our top medical schools in the nation. Mm-hmm. He's board certified in internal medicine, hematology, and oncology. He's practiced for 17 years, and his practice includes the specialties of hematology, oncology, with special interest in geriatric oncology. He's also director of Vitas Hospice, who's one of our sponsors today. And he's currently the chairman of Scripps Cancer Center Committee at Scripps Memorial Hospital in San Diego, and actively participates in the advancement of cancer research through clinical trials. And he's been responsible for training many excellent young physicians and is even an assistant professor at UCSD. So, Dr. Sinclair, let me welcome you on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. And that bio is a little old. I've been in practice now for about 25 years, but...
We took some years off your life there.
I appreciate a little anti-aging going on here.
There you go.
That's how we work.
I do appreciate it.
So yeah. I guess my first question for the audience is, what is oncology and what's an oncologist?
Well, oncology really is a study of cancer, so you don't even have to be an MD. There are oncologists who are PhDs, but I have a training in internal medicine, and after internal medicine, I did 3 years of fellowship in medical oncology, which means to learn as best we can the causes of cancer, the various types of cancer, the treatments, both early, late, and then very importantly, the supportive care necessary to manage a cancer patient if, in fact, the disease cannot be reversed.
How'd you get interested in oncology? Because it's kind of... the pressing part of medicine from one standpoint, because you're dealing with people in the last 5-10% of their lives. Give us some insight into that.
Well, I had a mentor when I was in medical school in Wisconsin. The American Cancer Society actually paid for a summer internship. And during that time,
nice.
Met a man who was a hematologist oncologist. And what impressed me most was he combined great scientific interest with compassion. And that just excited me. And so I stuck with it. He actually sent me out to UCSD, where I continued to have mentors in hematology oncology. And what I found is even in those cases where I cannot cure, I could always care for those patients. And I also found the whole field of science fascinating and the rapid changes that have taken place, as well as the detection and prevention, and then the treatments are just phenomenal. So it's kept me busy, it's kept me interested, and thankfully, my patients and their families are actually my best teachers.
Well, that's great.
You know, okay, so we're talking about cancer, and I should make note for our audience members out there that are tuning into the show for the first time. The show's really about healthy aging, but every once in a while, we need to kind of buckle down and get serious about what happens to you when you don't listen to us. So hopefully Dr. Sinclair can shed light on that. But speaking of the whole cancer thing, Dr. Emder, you brought up on the first segment an article that talked about fish oil related to prostate cancer. So, I mean, turning this
over
to
so
Dr.
I mean,
Sinclair, I'm kind of curious how you feel about that.
Right. Well, I took a look at that article and, you know, at face value, it's fascinating. The problem is the wealth of information for fish oils in cancer prevention is positive.
That's great.
Primarily omega-3s. So you're going to want your cold water fish because they're much higher in omega-3.
What are cold water fish?
Basically salmon would be a classic.
Dang, the one I don't.
Cod would be okay.
What about sardines?
Sardines actually do generally go through a whole range of temperatures, so sardines are good. And plus, sardines come from the Mediterranean, and we all know, at least my training says, that the Mediterranean diet makes sense. So I'm all for sardines. I have to be careful myself because of my blood pressure, so I have to be cautious of the salt. But otherwise, I think sardines are fantastic. Because prostate cancer is so common, I really don't want the listeners to think that they have to stay away from fish. I think that the value for their cardiovascular system, as well as other cancers, is simply too important. And there are plenty of other things you can do to prevent prostate cancer, diet being very critical, exercise important, and stress management.
Well, you know, everybody's concerned about, you know, like the boogeyman of cancer. So yeah. I guess my first question is, you know, who's at risk for cancer and what can we do to reduce our risk?
Well, it's clearly an age-related disease. So the average age in my practice is probably about 80. And that's good and bad. I mean, think about that. You've lived to 80. That's pretty remarkable. You've gotten past the big killer, cardiovascular disease. And so cancer is primarily a disease of aging. It can happen in young people. I do not care for pediatric oncology cases. They're very uncommon, but it's simply not part of my training. I do see young people, but generally the younger people may be hereditary, breast cancer being an example of that. A young woman, 35, 40 years old, there's a pretty good chance that she may have a hereditary component. But for the bulk of people, it is not hereditary. It's their environment, and after 80 years, any indiscretion might add up. Obesity, inactivity, excessive stress. 80 years is a long time to live and expose our DNA to all these potential harmful things, and that leads to cancer. Hereditary is probably less than 10%. So for those of you who don't have a family history of cancer, you're not off the hook.
So, Dr. Sinclair, what do you do to keep yourself cancer-free?
Well, I tell you, it's not from what I learned in medical school. Medical school, I got 1 hour of nutrition.
No kidding.
Yeah. No information about exercise and no information about stress management. So I've taught myself. And I find that, and I tell every patient I see, that they have a role to play in preventing cancer. I can't do it all. So I want them to stay active physically. You don't have to run a marathon, but it needs to be regular physical activity. I want them to eat healthy. You don't have to be a vegan. Congratulations if you are. It's a good thing. I like the Mediterranean diet because it has a lot of options. And as stress, yes, stress is a problem. We all have it. Every patient tells me stress caused their cancer. I don't think it actually causes cancer, but I think it promotes cancer.
No kidding. Can you expand on that just a little bit? Because I'm in a stressful environment every day, you know, and I'm just, how do you get out of that without quitting your job?
It's exactly. There's two different kinds of stresses. There are kinds of stresses that we need. I mean, we live in the West. There's, you know, we have to get up in the morning. We have to pay the mortgage. We have to drive through traffic. There are stresses that you will have to deal with. Accept them. There are opportunities to make decisions about how much stress you need. Do you take the high-paying job or do you take the slightly lower-paying job with more free time? Do you make decisions about purchasing a very expensive boat or automobile, or can you get by with a smaller car or maybe rent a boat? By making those decisions, you're going to have less stress in your life so that we have plenty of opportunities. I don't think you could live a stress-free life, and I think that each of us make choices. It's easy for people, to simply think first before they make a decision. If that decision says it's going to be an enormous amount of stress and they're not sure they can take it, try another option that maybe doesn't have so much stress.
Hmm. Good advice.
And Dr. Emder, we did a show once where you'd kind of brought up the idea of sleep as well. So does that kind of go hand in hand?
Yeah, there's a lot of new information about sleep. And sadly, for those of you who work nights, I hate to bring this up, but there's some very recent data to suggest that night shift people have a higher incidence of cancer. Now, I mean, speaking as a physician who works at a hospital, I need night shift staff. I think what it probably means is that if you do work night shifts, you probably ought to do a couple of things. Try to rotate off once in a while and make sure you get adequate sleep during the daytime. I would argue that 6 to 8 hours, depending upon your age, is critical. There's no doubt that sleep allows you to reset a few things. I think the telomeres are longer if you get a good night's sleep. So I'm a big believer. And how do you get a good night's sleep? Well, one of the ways to do it is stay active. If you're active during the day, if you eat healthy during the day, you're going to need a good night's sleep and you're going to earn a good night's sleep.
Nice thing about this is, you know, you don't have to sign up for any health plan. You know, you don't have to buy any pill. You know, you don't have to buy a book. You just have to use a little common sense and do what
Which
your mother.
Which is not so common.
It's
like
not so common. But, you know, do what, you know, our mothers and grandmothers told us, which was, you know, get our sleep, get our exercise,
you know,
and
yes,
eat right.
But there are a lot of people out there that are now thinking, I caused my own cancer. Now it's my responsibility. Now it falls back in my hands. So you get those kind of people that are like, yes, I can take the bull by the horns and I can be in charge and I have control. And then you get those people that are thinking, oh, crap, I have control.
Right. It's called the vicious cycle. Mm-hmm. I had a stressful day. Oh, my God, my cancer is going to come back. Not only that, but I caused it. And that's clearly not the case. And again, I would go back to this idea of causation. I really don't believe that cancer actually triggers the cancer. I just think the more stress we have, the weaker immune system, and the more likely the cancer is going to either return or grow faster. So take an opportunity. You're going to have a stressful day. You're going to have a stressful week. We all do. But take opportunities. Make good decisions that lead to opportunities of less stress, and it will pay off.
What about alcohol and stress? So we had Dr. Tiru on the show, and she was saying like one glass of wine for women is okay, two is bad.
Right. The data is pretty clear. And coming from the Midwest, where alcohol is consumed in massive quantities, it's been a challenge for me to bring this into my own life. But it seems kind of simple and probably true that the equal of one alcoholic beverage per day for a woman is enough. Anything above that can be shown statistically to be linked to an increase in cancer, and specifically breast cancer.
Oh, no.
Men, thankfully for men, it's two alcoholic beverages a day. I guess we're bigger. I guess we metabolize it differently. But again, if you go beyond that, you're going to add statistically to your risk of a number of different cancers, including prostate cancer. So I think, to me, as always, moderation matters.
Well, I'm going to have Kendra over for dinner Friday night.
And yes.
So you're only going to have one glass of wine.
You know what?
I'll have your other glass.
I am trying to do this. Actually, my husband and I were just talking about it, trying to limit, because at the same time, I'm eating healthy and I'm not seeing any change in weight. And my husband goes, well, you know, honey, we are drinking a lot.
There's a lot of calories.
Because we love our red wine. It's not, you know, drinking to like, you know, do shots and stuff like that. But I love really good Cabernet, you know, and so
that's the Mediterranean.
So
they've been drinking red wine for centuries, and they get away with it.
So there you go.
But they're active. They manage their stress, and the food they eat matters. And it may be how they combine those things. Red wine in Italy with a nice fresh Mediterranean meal may be different than red wine here with a hamburger.
Right. And you know what? That's a great segue. So pause on that thought. And audience members out there, stay with us. When we get back, we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Sinclair about cancer. And I am very curious about a little nutrition information. So after this quick word from our sponsor, we'll be right back.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right. I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care, just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com. Or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
Everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined Radio. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And our special guest today is Dr. James Sinclair. So this half of the show is sponsored by Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center, where we're offering skilled nursing, physical therapy, rehab to anybody you know that might need it, especially on the East County side. But anyway, moving on, right before we ended the last part of our show, we were talking about nutrition. As Dr. Sinclair is an oncologist, obviously a specialist in cancer. But what hit me is we're talking about wine, which Dr. Emder, you know, we love our wines, but Dr. Sinclair's saying there's limits. So, which makes me so sad. But I suppose it's smarter, right? So, Dr. Sinclair, what other kind of nutritional information could you give us to help us kind of, and briefly, because there's so much to talk about on this subject, but to kind of help us stay away from cancer and not cause it?
Well, logically, colon cancer. There is an area where the food we eat is in direct contact with our bowel wall. So it makes sense that foods that are high in fat content might not be so good because fat carries toxins. Mm-hmm. So if you have a fatty meal and those toxins in the fat are in contact with your bowel wall, I could see why that might actually cause a cancer to form. Therefore, the reverse, low fat, high fiber meals might very well protect your colon. And the advantage you have with fiber is that it transits faster. For those of you who are seniors who might be concerned about the slowness of your bowel function. I think if you add fiber, you're going to be able to move things along a little quicker. So if there is a toxin in your food, it's going to go by and be less likely to cause cancer. That's just colon cancer. Clearly in breast cancer, fat matters because it seems that the fat carries chemicals that then get carried to the breast and stay in the breast. Prostate cancer, another hormonally sensitive cancer, it turns out that fats influence hormone production in the body. So once again, I think pretty clear that we have that in common with the cardiovascular people. Fat is not good for us. The American diet is way, way too high in fat.
Now, aren't there good fats for you? And with throwing that out there, what about meat as well? Because I know Dr. Emder doesn't eat meat, but you were talking about the Mediterranean diet, which has some chicken in it, right?
Correct. The Mediterraneans eat a lot of fish, some chicken. They even have a little lamb. The key is moderation. If you take the industrial-raised beef, and I hope you're not being sponsored by any beef companies, the industrial-raised beef has some of the most disadvantaged fats that you can possibly have. So that's something I would be cautious of. But when you look at fish, certainly wild fish, the fat content is a lot healthier, and certainly omega-3 is healthier than omega-6. I think there's a ratio of omega-6 to 3 that should be 2 to 1. The typical beef diet, the 6 to 3 ratio could be as high as 5 to 1 or even 10 to 1, and that's unacceptable. So clearly there are good fats. But even good fats should be taken in moderation. If you look at the Mediterraneans, they use olive oil as their oil. They stay away from corn or vegetable oils. Mm-hmm. Clearly a bad omega-3 to 6 ratio. So olive oil to cook with, olive oil to eat with, whole grains, fresh vegetables, fresh fruit. And meat is not their main portion. It's a side dish in the Mediterranean. They don't sit around a big piece of meat. Where I grew up in the Midwest, you put a piece of meat on your plate, and then you might put a couple of vegetables.
Right, because it's barbecue time over there.
Bratwurst for sure big in Wisconsin where I grew up, and I was just back from my high school reunion, and what did we have? Bratwurst.
I'm sure everybody was probably overweight.
Yeah, I noticed that I knew a lot of people moved away, and they looked pretty slim and actually quite youthful, but those who decided to stay have added a few pounds. I figure it's good for the winter.
Yes.
That's about all it's good for.
So maybe meat in moderation twice a week, red meat twice a week?
Yeah, I think that make it less often and don't make it the main dish. Make it a side dish.
Sweet.
And, I will say this, the tri-tip, I love it. Small piece of tri-tip that's been marinated at Seaside. Fantastic.
But does how it's cooked make a difference?
Yeah.
It's
kind of on the once again, the barbecue matters. If you're going to barbecue, try to do it over indirect heat. The hotter it gets, the more likely you're going to cause a carcinogen to form. Probably baking it, braising it is better than barbecue. Frying, I suspect, is about the worst thing you can do to food, so stay away from that. Even fish is probably better baked than fried. So temperature matters. The higher the temperature, the more dangerous it is.
Any problems with cooking our food on Teflon or the others?
I've read about that, and my sense is the risk is so small compared to just bad eating that it's probably good enough. I think someday, the old iron kettle, probably a frying pan is probably the way to go. Problem is that just becomes too inconvenient. And if you make it inconvenient, people won't do it. They'll back down to their fast food restaurant.
Well, assuming everybody now is going to just do meat like twice a week and we're going to eliminate the fat.
One glass of wine a day.
One glass of wine a day. And, we're going to get our body mass index into the perfect range. Let's talk about
the show's over then. We're done. We solved the world's problem, right?
With the world's problem. But for the two of the audience that do not do that, let's talk about screening. What should we be doing to screen ourselves?
Well, I think
cancer?
The idea behind screening is that there's clear evidence with cancer. The earlier you detect it, the more likely you can cure it. That's true of breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, what have you. So the theory behind screening is if we can catch the cancer early, presumably before it's causing any problems, we're going to do a better job. So breast cancer probably has the most solid data, which suggests that at some age, and the debate is on 40 or 50, women should consider a mammogram. Should it be every year, every 2 years? That's debatable. What does a mammogram do? It's an x-ray, and that's a concern because you're exposing people to x-rays, that looks into the breast for abnormalities, either calcifications or densities that you wouldn't expect to be present. not always cancer. So if a woman goes and gets a mammogram and she hears about some densities, not to worry. It may turn out to be benign. But it leads to the next step, which could be a biopsy. And the biopsy obviously will make the diagnosis, or it'll say what the lesion really is. So I think those are reasonable things to do. Self-breast exam, very reasonable, because the woman knows something that's changed, something that doesn't belong there, and she can bring it to the attention of her doctor. And then the third thing for breast cancer is a checkup. Your gynecologist, your primary care doctor ought to do a breast examination when you come in for your annual visit. Pretty clear. I think the data from mammographies suffered a little bit recently, but I would still argue that for most women, it's reasonable. And if you have a strong family history, there's no doubt that mammography is helpful. We are not at a point where we can recommend screening MRI, so I won't even get into that. When it comes to colon cancer, there's no...
Yeah, before you go, go off of the breast cancer, sure. With Angelina Jolie and her BRCA testing, because of the family history...
BRCA testing?
BRCA.
Yeah, BRCA1 and BRCA2. Those are genetic mutations that take place in the somatic gene. So you're not, in the genome, so that you're born with these mutations. And they do dramatically increase your risk of breast cancer. So if you have one or the other, your lifetime risk of getting breast cancer is probably over 50%. Clearly, she had an over 50% risk of getting breast cancer. And that's what led her to decide to have her breast removed. It is not mandatory. That's an option. The other option is simply be screened more often and follow the advice we're giving. Eat healthy. You, even if you have the gene, you can influence that gene by healthy lifestyle. So I think it's important. You should not get a BRCA1 or a 2 test just because you're a woman. You have to have a strong family history, usually a woman in your family under the age of 50 with breast cancer. That would be the most common reason to consider getting a BRCA1 or 2 testing.
Great. Hmm. Thank you. So what about colon cancer?
Yeah, well, colon cancer affects men and women equally. It's fairly common, and there's clear evidence that the cancer starts as a polyp. And polyps tend to bleed. So one of the ways to detect a polyp before it causes problems is blood in the stool. We can have our stools checked. The gynecologist can do it. Your general interest can do it. I think everybody agrees that an annual fecal occult blood test is what it's called, is appropriate. The question becomes colonoscopy. That's a device, a lighted device that's passed into the colon after it's been prepared. That looks visibly at the entire colon. It's a great test. I've been through it. It's currently suggested it be done once around the age of 50, unless you have a family history in which it should be done around the age of 40. If it's clear, you can do it again in 10 years. If you find a polyp, amazing. You remove the polyp, you've actually cured cancer. You don't need to have a big operation. It's phenomenal. We really think that's why colonoscopy has been shown statistically to lower the fatality rate for colon cancer, because you've not only made an early, you've screened for it, but if you find a polyp, you've actually cured or prevented.
That's great.
If the polyp comes back benign, you prevent it from converting to a malignant cancer.
So is that something on the inside, a polyp?
Yes, so polyp forms inside your bowel. So it's like if you get a lesion on your skin that sticks up, this was a lesion that sticks up in the colon. So we don't feel it or sense it. So it's the only way to pick it up is by doing the periscope. Preparing for the colonoscopy, not a lot of fun, but it's over with and you've done. And I had mine, several years ago, and I wanted to do another one for another number of years. I think it's a great screening test. It has its risks. If you're over the age of 70, 75, 80, the dangers of complications, because you need some anesthesia, and there's a danger of damage to the bowel. So there is a point where you should stop doing screening colonoscopies.
Hmm. What about, there's something my patients ask me about, these virtual colonoscopies. Yeah, did you comment on that?
Did you say virtual?
Yes, yeah. Virtual. It's a radiologic procedure. Instead of passing the periscope up, they give you some, you still have to clean out your colon, but you put some contrast material into the bowel along with some air, and then you take a CAT scan. It turns out that the studies so far have failed to show that you get the equivalent screening rate compared to a traditional colonoscopy. So the greatest decision maker in healthcare is Medicare, and Medicare has not agreed that a virtual colonoscopy should replace a regular colonoscopy at this point. I think that as the technology improves, that day will come, and that will reduce the risk, because you don't need anesthetic and your risk of perforation is not there, but it's not quite ready for prime time.
I mean, there's another procedure where you swallow a capsule that's actually a camera, a very high tech.
It's coming. It's currently the only place we use the camera is in the small bowel diseases. So if we suspect a person's having a small bowel problem, we've checked their upper bowel, we checked their lower bowel, we still are worried, we'll have them swallow that camera. It is remarkable. And the camera literally takes a video all the way down. We're not at a point where we can use it in the colon, but I would suspect in the next 5 years we will be.
Well, that's great.
Wow. Okay, there's a lot of information there. So let's take a quick break after this message from our sponsors. Audience, stay with us. We will be right back with our continued conversation with Dr. Sinclair on cancer and oncology.
And prevention.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and have the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right, I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care, just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays, and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com. Or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined Radio. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder, and our special guest today is Dr. James Sinclair. We've been talking this morning about, cancer, I guess, and different ways to prevent it, as our show is about healthy aging and things that you can do to kind of take life by the horns and prevent this kind of stuff. But obviously, there are times when you can't, and it just comes down to it that we've got to do some screening or maybe some treatment. So, Dr. Emder, I'm going to hand it back over to you.
Well, other than doing a healthy aging specialist, I'm actually also a pulmonologist. So I'm really interested in Dr. Sinclair's thoughts on screening for lung cancer, because this is also a controversial area, because a lot of times patients present too late to really have an impact on the disease. They recommend, routine chest x-rays, but, you know, we miss a lot of lung cancers on chest x-ray. And some experts are advocating screening CTs of the chest, but that's also an expensive way to go. So I'd like to hear what Dr. Sinclair has to say about CT scanning as a screening for lung cancer.
Well, obviously, the first thing is you can't smoke. If you smoke, that's the problem. So for non-smokers, there's no need to screen because it's such a rare disease, although it's becoming a little bit more common in non-smokers. But getting to smokers, I was in training, and the VA did a study looking at chest x-rays as a way to screen for lung cancer. And unfortunately, a routine chest x-ray, even though we do them, really hasn't led to a significant improvement in the mortality of lung cancer. So the thought was, well, it's too late when you get a chest x-ray. The cancer is too big already, because by the time a lung cancer gets to be the size of, say, a dime in diameter, it's already spread. So we'd like to catch it earlier, and CT scan potentially can get down to about 3 or 4 millimeters, which seems like small enough to catch it early. And there have been a number of CT scan trials done, and the more recent trials have suggested for the right population, either current smokers or people who've accumulated many pack years of smoking, it may be reasonable to do an annual CT scan, screening scan. So you try to keep the radiation dose down. And then if you see something and it's appropriate to biopsy, it's biopsied. And if you make a diagnosis, you can proceed to removal. And surgery is the only cure for lung cancer. So I think what you're seeing right now is across the country, we're seeing that people are beginning to open up screening clinics with thin slice CT scan done with high technology, so the radiation dose is low, and you need to then maintain follow-up with these people. One CT scan doesn't do it. They're going to have to come in annually. You're going to have a way to keep an eye on these people, because changes take place, and that may lead to the biopsy.
You know, question, as we've been talking on the show about different things to eat or exercise, I'm thinking with lung cancer, smoking's a big deal. So has that changed over time?
It has, although it's regional. The U.S., I think, has done quite well. Certainly California's done exceptionally well when it comes to smoking. Our Asian friends have not done so well. Clearly, smoking cessation has worked. I think that we have still a ways to go. Anybody who drives by a high school knows that there's still smoking going on. Sad as that is, I think that they need to know that it's a disaster if you stay with it. It's not just lung cancer. It's head and neck cancer, kidney cancer, bladder cancer. It goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. So smoking cessation is important. There's some great programs out there. And no, you don't need to take a drug to stop smoking, although the TV commercials might say you should.
Mm-hmm. I guess we should also do a plug for industrial exposure.
Yes, it's still an issue. Obviously, asbestos is a concern. I mean, most of the commercials are run by attorneys because it's an issue and there's litigation involved. But no doubt about it, asbestos. And then there's radon in certain parts of the country, a number of different toxins in environmental areas. Coal mining clearly is a problem. So there are other causes. Secondhand smoke is still a concern. And there's clearly got to be other issues related to lung cancer, because we have non-smokers, people never smoked, no secondhand smoke, who still get lung cancer. So I'm sure there are other environmental issues. And in fact, it looks like diet may make a difference for smokers.
No kidding. And okay, so what about those people that have smoked their whole lives and then, you know, they've never gotten it and said, well, if I stop smoking now, I might get it. Like, is that a true fact?
Well, this is what happens. A classic patient comes to me with brand new diagnosis of lung cancer, and I ask him, do you smoke? Oh, no, I don't smoke. Did you ever smoke? Yeah, but I stopped 6 months ago. Then I ask him, why did you stop 6 months ago? Well, I was getting short of breath. I was coughing up blood. They stopped because they had cancer. So I think that it's pretty clear that there's a relationship. What's also clear is the longer you're away from the cigarettes, the lower your risk is. If you smoke for 20 years, a pack a day, if you go another 20 years without any cigarettes, you can get your risk almost back to normal.
Oh, no kidding. Well, there's hope.
There's hope to stop.
So let's talk treatment. I mean, cancer is a huge field. We're talking about lung cancer. What are treatment options for lung cancer, if you have it?
Well, lung cancer is kind of an exciting area. It had a long ways to go. So clearly surgery, if you screen a person, you find a small cancer, get it out. There's talk about radiation. CyberKnife is a treatment that's new and exciting, but it still hasn't been accepted as the initial treatment.
What is that exactly?
CyberKnife is a type of radiation that's very pinpointed. It uses all kinds of software technology to give the treatment in 3 or 4 treatments. So it's pretty remarkable. But today, still, surgery is the way to go for the treatment to cure. What's nice about the changes in lung cancer is for the other 90% of people who can't be cured with surgery, we have now begun to have some new medications. And in fact, two of the medications are pills, which is shocking. When I first started in practice, there were no pills. Everything was injectable, toxic, mm-hmm. made you sick, made your hair fall out. We now have some pills, but it is for a subset of patients with lung cancer. What we know is that if you analyze the cancer, look at the DNA, look for mutations. There are two mutations that appear to predict a benefit from a pill. which is phenomenal. So I have patients who have the mutation, take one pill a day, and their cancer responds. These are not curative treatments, but they are impressive. They can lead to control for months to years. I have a woman who was on a pill for 18 months before the disease began to grow. Chemotherapy certainly has a ways to go, but there are active drugs in lung cancer that are worth exploring for the appropriate person. If I have a patient who's well into their 80s and has significant comorbidity, I personally would avoid chemotherapy in that patient. I certainly have colleagues who would not. To me, it's a risk-benefit issue, and I just think the risks are too great, the benefits are too small to consider it. I have patients say, well, you've got to do something. Well, yeah, I can support you. There are a number of ways I can manage you through palliative care that can be a benefit without having to expose you to chemotherapy. I'm glad that the field is growing, and the number of drugs coming online, probably only from 5 to 10 new cancer drugs every year that have come online.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's kind of a big deal. My grandma actually had cancer and ended up passing, unfortunately. And our sponsor, VITAS Hospice, took really good care of her. This was a couple years ago. But at the same time, it was recommended, and she was in her 80s, it was recommended for chemo. And I know that that works for a lot of people, but it made her just so weak. I would kind of imagine that there would be a little controversy on that, especially with new things coming out. And
well, there was a recent study out east that looked at palliative care, which is basically supporting patients through an illness that may be terminal. And they basically randomized lung cancer patients, advanced lung cancer patients, to, quote, traditional therapy or traditional therapy plus palliative care. And palliative care, not only did the patients feel better, because palliative care is about symptom management, but shockingly, they live longer. And one of the reasons they live longer is that the conversations that took place during their palliative care allowed the patients and families to make decisions that included discontinuing inappropriate chemotherapy or radiation therapy. Shocking to the field, because most oncologists were dumbfounded. They just assumed that palliative care was just a nice extra. But it looks like probably all people with metastatic lung cancer ought to have access to good palliative care. And if, in fact, they decline looks like their survival is going to be limited to, say, less than 6 months, at that point, they could easily consider hospice.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring that up, because last week we were talking about advanced directives and sitting down with families and finding out exactly
right.
What they're looking for.
The problem is a lot of families don't know what the loved ones want, and because of that, I think in a lot of instances they go on too long with treatment without going to palliative care.
The palliative care people simply sit down and have that conversations. Oncologists are trained, but I got to admit to you that it's very uncommon in a busy oncology practice to sit down and have the conversation. The palliative care physicians are trained. They have the time. It may be a doc. It may be a social worker. It may be a chaplain. But they take that time, and that information is critical. And you're right. A lot of people hide out and go, well, dad must want chemotherapy. And the dad says, well, I better have chemotherapy because my kids want me to have chemotherapy. Well, the reality is maybe not. And not only does it improve your quality of life, the studies suggest you actually live longer, which is amazing.
You know, as physicians, we always want to preserve life, but sometimes we do it to the extreme.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that it's not on purpose, obviously. I would never give chemotherapy to shorten their life. But sadly, if you lose track of what the potential downside is to it, you sometimes get overwhelmed and impressed by what you can accomplish, and you forget about the downside. And that's not just true of oncology and chemotherapy. It's true in some cardiac surgery. It's certainly true in a number of other areas. I think we all have to pay attention to the downside of what we're doing and give the patient and the family an opportunity to have a good conversation and together make the decision about how far to go.
Now, we talked about this on the show last week. My mother-in-law at age 84 came down with a pancreatic cancer, and we gave her the permission, and she gave us the permission to ask about what she wanted, and she said, I don't want chemotherapy. I want to be comfortable, and I want to go home. And that's exactly what happened. And a lot of patients, if you ask them, they'll tell you what they want, and it may just be that.
What a shock.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crazy, I know. Well, Dr. Sinclair, thank you so much for being here today. I know our audience members out here, or at least I have, learned quite a lot. So if they do have any questions out there, is there a way for them to get a hold of you?
Well, probably the best way is to go to VITAS.com, and that'll give you a phone number to call locally. Easy to find me that way. I also work for C-Care, which is an oncology group. You can find us at C-Care.com. So there are
how to spell that?
It's just C-C-A-R-E.
Oh, okay.
Just all letters like that. But those are easy ways to find me. I'm on the web. I don't have my personal web page, but both VITAS and my oncology practice do. And then I'm the medical director for the Cancer Center at Scripps, and so you can find me at scripps.org.
Got it. And what a great resource San Diego has with you here. So thank you so much. And Dr. Emder, our audience members can find you as well. You've got a webpage.
Yeah, it's Healthy Aging Medical Associates. And my office number is 619-286-8803.
And of course, jump on our Facebook page as well, agingradio.com. If you've got any questions, feel free to pop them up there, and we might be able to answer those for you on the air. And send us some recipes too. As Dr. Emder was saying, we're looking for new things to eat. So I think that's all for today. Thank you so much for joining us, and stay with us for next week at 2 o'clock for Aging Redefined.
You've been listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone.